This is our State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine with Wisconsin Public Radio State Government Reporter Sean Johnson, who has news and analysis of the past week in state politics. And we will welcome your questions and your reactions to the end of the legislative session, the bills that passed, those that were signed or will be signed by the governor, and more at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. He joins us in the studio. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
So we had the last floor session for the state Senate, and on the floor, we had four state senators delivering their farewell addresses. So, why they're not running for reelection?
They are not. Yeah. 90-plus years between the four of them? State Senator, Bob Jauch, State Senator Tim Cullen, State Senator Dale Schultz, and State Senator John Layman. There we go.
Yeah, we will be talking with State Senator John Layman after 7:30. He is not going to be running for re-election, essentially because he was redistricted out of his district, right?
That map would probably be near impossible for a Democrat to win in most elections. So he is, at the moment, a candidate for lieutenant governor, though. The others, Senator Schultz, Senator Jauch, Senator Cullen, who have really sort of become kindred spirits in their last couple legislative sessions, have started seeing things, you know, each other's way on quite a few issues. They are all retiring from politics as far as we know.
Yeah, and calling for more compromise, more bipartisanship in state politics. They bemoan the extreme state of state politics today.
Yeah, and I mean, you've heard at least a couple of those guys give pretty sharp partisan speeches on the floor, but I think they genuinely do like working on deals, which, you know, it seems like a lot of longtime politicians enjoy. And, you know, Bob Jauch, for example, said 32 years I've been here, the best memories are when we work together. And, you know, he can point to a lot of packages that he put together back when he had power, and he can point to a lot of speeches he made where he really handed it to Republicans.
Yeah, well, we did have Senator Jauch and Senator Schultz on the show last week on Thursday. You can check back on the archives if you'd like to listen to those interviews. And we will be talking with retiring state senator, well, I don't know if retiring is the best word, but John Layman, who is not seeking re-election but is running as a candidate for lieutenant governor, coming up after 7:30. We'll talk about the state of politics today, and we'll talk about his campaign for lieutenant governor after 7:30. So is this it then, Sean? This session is over? Is the legislature completely done?
Sort of, maybe. I mean, as far as we know, they're done. The regular legislative session has wrapped up in terms of the regularly scheduled floor periods. I mean, in theory, they could come back, and if the governor vetoes a bill, for example, they could come back and try to override that, but he hasn't done too many of those. He's vetoed one bill since he's been governor. So a couple other scenarios could get them back to Madison. One of them could involve Representative Bill Cramer. Representative Cramer, who was until recently the Assembly Republican Majority Leader, after it came out that he sexually harassed a couple of women on a Washington, D.C. fundraiser. His colleagues found out about that, and they voted him out of leadership. He remains a state representative, and a report a couple weeks ago came out that said that he had actually charged him with two counts of felony sexual assault. Pretty serious stuff. And so there was some question as to whether Assembly Republican leaders would meet and say, I mean, they could take the matter into their own hands and say, we're going to vote as an assembly to expel you. That is a power that the assembly has. You know, it's really like it's kind of a courtroom proceeding. You meet, you have a hearing, they have the person who's being expelled has a chance to make their case, call witnesses, and that's something that the assembly leaders signaled last week they're not going to do.
Yeah, do they say why they're not going to do that?
Well, they said they said you know, they asked Representative Cramer to resign. He has not indicated he's going to do that. His attorney said that he's he's going to stay put for the rest of his term. He has already signaled he's not going to run for re-election. They said that the Assembly Republican leaders said that they believe that the criminal case against him is credible, and they want that to run its course. You know, some have interpreted that as potentially being, you know, if you had an expulsion proceeding against Representative Kramer, he could call witnesses that could potentially include the woman who has, you know, filed these charges against him. And, you know, that could be beyond being embarrassing or, you know, terrifying. That could disrupt the criminal case, they're saying. But they didn't get into that level of detail, though, in their letter.
There was a report in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that Senator Ron Johnson knew of the sexual assault that Representative Kramer is accused of.
There was, and the Journal Sentinel got that information because it wasn't, I mean, it was supposed to be blacked out in a police report, but they said it was, you know, very easy to read. And so they knew that this, you know, that this woman had worked for Senator Johnson and that that he knew about it. He issued a statement late Friday, I believe, that said that, you know, I knew about it, her attorney knew about it, and we reached a decision not to release the information because they felt it was, you know, what was best for her, and it was abiding by her wishes. Though, you know, since Representative Kramer has been in the news recently, she decided to come forward with these, you know, after hearing about other women being in similar situations.
So initially she did not want to press charges or have charges pressed.
Yeah.
But
and if you look at the police report, I mean, it was over concerns that it would hurt the party. I mean, mm-hmm. This happened in a Waukesha County Republican Party event. And, you know, really the Republican Party in Wisconsin revolves around Waukesha County. And so then it kind of begs the question, well, who did know about this? Because that's where all our leaders are from, or at least they have to, you know, pay homage to Waukesha County. So
as it stands now, though, it does not seem as though the Assembly will gather to formally try to expel Representative Kramer.
No, that letter didn't hold that out as any possibility, really. They said, we'd like you to leave. In an accompanying press release, they said, you know, his constituents could recall him from office, or if he's convicted of felonies, he'd have to leave office. But both of those processes take long enough that they probably would carry the recall process. I'm not sure they could get done before the regularly scheduled election. You know, even if he were convicted of a felony, that wouldn't happen until after the election. So those are probably, you know, not unlikely scenarios.
Well, another scenario to bring the legislature back to Madison would be if there is a special session called by the governor on voter ID. What are the chances of that?
I think, you know, they're decent anyway, because we don't know what the state Supreme Court is going to do with voter ID, but we do know that two lawsuits challenging the constitutionality of voter ID are before the state Supreme Court. And that key members of the state Supreme Court signaled that they had issues with voter ID when it was up in oral arguments. The governor, beyond that, I mean, the governor has said that he's talked to Department of Justice attorneys who represent the state, represent his law, essentially, and they've said that it has issues that need to be addressed, too. So, you know, when might that happen? Talk to former state Supreme Court Justice Jeanine Geske about when the state Supreme Court might reach a decision in that case. She said it'd probably be a few months anyway.
I believe we're going to see it either the last week in June or the first couple weeks in July. That's the end of the term for the court, but I suspect there's a good chance that there'll be multiple opinions. That takes time to write. I know that they're backlogged a little bit on their opinions, so I suspect it won't come out to the end of the term, which is at the end of June.
And so that's just the state Supreme Court cases that are challenging voter ID. There is another lawsuit against voter ID, which is currently pending in federal court. Oral arguments, I believe, are completed late last year. And Justice Geske did not want to hazard a guess in there. She said it's federal court. Federal judge can basically proceed at his own timeline. And so then that kind of begs the question, well, if it's July or if it's getting later, you know, moving into, you know, potentially August, at what point Does the legislature become uncomfortable with, you know, coming into session, changing the voting laws that close to an election? Pose that question to State Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, and he was noncommittal, but, I mean, here's what he had to say.
It's a good question. You know, it's hard to really judge that without, you know, weighing all the factors related to either a reelection or who comes through primaries. I mean, stuff like that that could have a direct effect on it, but absolutely timing would be part of a decision that you'd try and make.
Sean, what could the legislature do to a new voter ID bill if they come back into special session that would, pass constitutional muster? Do they know what they need to change to take away any legal challenges?
Yeah, I mean, the Assembly already passed something that they thought dealt with this, but Senator Fitzgerald basically said, I don't think that goes far enough, and we really need a work product to deal with here. We need to have a decision from the courts saying, here's where this law falls short before we can decide where to fix it. I think it would probably have to do with, you know, the ease with which you can get some of the documents you need for a photo ID. Even if it's a free ID, it can be expensive and extremely cumbersome for some people to get a photo ID if they don't have the right documents. And so they would have to make that easier, essentially, either financially or, in another way.
Briefly before our break, the governor signed a number of bills, including one dealing with elections. He signed a bill that lets election observers stand within 3 feet of a voter. Why is this controversial?
You can imagine it's pretty close. I think it's closer than we're sitting right now in this, not a huge studio here. The bill would say that if you were an election observer, and basically anyone can be an election observer, you can be as close as 3 feet to a voter, or the clerk has some discretion here, but you couldn't be any farther away than 8 feet away from a voter if you wanted to be. Where this could be an issue, critics worry, is that, you know, you have, let's say, an inner city ward where people who are inclined to believe there's voter fraud happening are going to show up, and they're going to be right up next to the voters looking for anything. And the worry is that that's going to create, an atmosphere where the observers are trying to intimidate the voters. Again, the law does include some discretion for clerks. So backers of the plan say hopefully they'll be able to, you know, choose the right distance.
We are talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, about the latest happenings at the state capitol. We'll come back after this short break talking about some of the bills the state Senate passed last week and some of the bills that the governor signed or will sign, and other campaign-related news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is our state capitol report. I'm Joy Cardine with Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter Sean Johnson, who is with us to bring us up to date on what's happening at the state capitol. The state Senate, in wrapping up its session for the year, passed a few bills last week, Sean, including that controversial oral chemotherapy bill. So what's the latest there?
Yeah, the oral chemotherapy bill, this is the bill that would have originally would have required insurance companies that cover chemotherapy to charge the same rates, whether that's delivered at a clinic through an IV or at home with a pill. The Assembly amended it to add a $100 copay, monthly copay, for medications. And so it kicked back to the Senate, who really didn't want that amendment. They passed the original version almost unanimously. And you had people on both sides of this issue essentially saying, we have a choice here about how, you know, what we're going to do. It's not an easy choice. Senator Tim Cullen, a Democrat from Janesville, cancer survivor, also a former insurance executive, he said the trouble with this bill, the way it's written, is that $100 copay could be expanded, and you could pay $100 copay for each drug in a chemo cocktail per month. Also, it's silent, he said, on letting insurance companies increase deductibles or coinsurance to make up the difference, because this is going to affect their bottom line. So, for those reasons, Senator Cullen excuse me, was a no vote on this, and he urged his colleagues to vote no.
I had to struggle for days with the same thing that all of you are struggling with. You know, do you accept the amendment, get something to the governor, fix it next year, maybe. I understand all that. Maybe the assembly will come back. Maybe they won't come back. It's a difficult choice for everybody in this chamber. But I really find this amendment outrageous. It's a complete giveaway to the health insurance industry at the expense of people who have cancer.
So the Republican sponsor of that bill in the Senate, Alberta Darling, said she would have liked it without that amendment. But, you know, she pushed back against the Democrats' attempts to change it because, you know, if the Senate had amended it, the Assembly would have had to come back to agree to the changes to send to the governor's desk, as Senator Cullen alluded to. The Assembly said they were done for the year. She actually, and Democrats wanted it to be more like the law in Missouri, which had all these protections against deductibles, coinsurance, stuff like that. Senator Darling said that would have been a bad idea.
So look, we have a choice today, a very easy choice, I think, because if you look at, do you want to pass the Missouri option in this amendment and take the chance that we're going to get nothing, then you can say, yeah, we should do that because we're the Senate and they should listen to us. I have been working on this for 2.5 years, and I'm not willing to make that risk.
So that was sent to the governor, and he signed it already. Mm-hmm. His office of the commissioner of insurance says, you know, in a letter that they read the law in the same way that assembly lawmakers say they intended it, and that is that the copay will be for $100 cap, not $100 per drug, and you know that it is as they hoped it would be, but you know they'll be enforce the letter of the law if it comes down to it.
We better hurry sure. to finish some of this other legislation. The Senate did pass a bill to legalize what is this, cannabis oil?
Yes, mm-hmm. I mean it's different than what we would refer to. It does come from the marijuana plant, and it is medicine. So in that sense, it's medical marijuana. But it's different than the medical marijuana that we've talked about in the past, or that it is legal in other states because it has very low levels of THC, which is what gives users a high. So this it's CBD or cannabidiol is something that some parents have found great success with to treat seizures. And it was before this law or before this bill. It's still illegal in Wisconsin. This bill would legalize it for the treatment of seizures. When they passed this, you had a bunch of parents in the gallery. They've really been the emotional face behind this issue. Among them was Beth Klausner. She says her 4-year-old son, Maddox, suffers from a rare form of epilepsy and has a seizure every day of his life. So they've tried all sorts of drugs, and she's very much looking forward to trying this one.
I feel like we have hope for the first time in 4 years. Like, we have hope that Maddox can have a better life.
So that one is on the governor's desk, awaiting, you know, a signature or veto. He sounded in a recent interview like he was going to sign it.
Yeah, and very briefly, doctors can now apologize to a patient for the loss, perhaps, of a loved one without fearing that they'll be sued.
Yeah, this is a bill that's been around for a long time. We have time to play the audio. Sure, Senator Leah Vukmir was a sponsor here. She said, essentially, we need this because right now doctors are afraid to show compassion.
Right now, if you talk to most medical students, they'll tell you that they're trained to zip up their lips when something bad happens. That wall of silence prevents doctors, nurses, and other healthcare providers from talking to patients and families at some of the most difficult times, at the death of their daughter, their son, their spouse, their loved one.
And so this bill would say you can't, that a doctor's apology can't be used as evidence in the courtroom in a medical malpractice lawsuit. However, it would say quite a bit more if you read the fine print of the bill, as State Senator Lena Taylor, a Democrat from Milwaukee, pointed out.
I believe that this bill is not about just, however, an apology. Because this bill addresses not just an apology, but it also addresses the issue of someone saying, my fault, I'm responsible, and I'm liable.
And that one goes to the governor's desk?
That one goes to the governor's, yes.
Yeah. Well, another news from the state capitol last week is that we heard State Senator Glenn Grothman is going to challenge Republican U.S. Congressman Tom Petri in the 6th Congressional District. What's up with this?
Yeah, Tom Petri has been in Congress more than 30 years. I mean, he's one of the most senior members of Congress. And the reason this is happening is because under the new map, the new political map, his district includes more of southeast Wisconsin, some of those conservative counties that turn out deep red in statewide elections. So Senator Grothman said that he wants to get in the race because he's seen an increase in dependence on government.
I think a lot of that happened under the Republicans, and I think Congressman Petri was part of the problem, but I think a larger thing, and I like Tom Petri personally a great deal, is I see a lack of leadership in trying to turn these problems around. I mean, many people are more outspoken about excessive government, the excessive spending, more outspoken about the culture of dependency, because I'm afraid if we don't turn these things around in the next 2 or 3 years, it's going to be too late.
Yeah.
Tom Petri wasn't available for an interview, but he said in a statement, "I plan to run and I plan to win."
There we go. Well, yeah. We'll leave it there for now for this edition of the State Capitol Report. Thanks, Sean.
All right. Thanks, Joy.
Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio State Government Reporter. We will talk with State Senator John Lehman coming up after the 7:30 news to talk about his run for Lieutenant Governor. I'm Joy Cardine.